The Aspern papers came to mind about a month after the Fenice fire, when I read in the Gazzettino that Olga Rudge had died at the age of 101. Like the fictional Giuliana Bordereau, Olga Rudge had been an American woman who had lived in Venice to an advanced age and had been the mistress of a long-dead American poet, in her case, Ezra Pound. Like Claire Claremont and Byron, she and Pound had also had an illegitimate daughter, but the similarity seemed to end there. The remarkable relationship between Olga Rudge and Ezra Pound had lasted 50 years, despite innumerable obstacles. His marriage to another woman, the dislocations of the Second World War, Pound's indictment for treason, and his 13-year imprisonment in an insane asylum after being judged unfit to stand trial. The bond between Olga Rudge and Ezra Pound was not, like Claremont and Byron's, just another brief, discarded affair. Also, unlike Claire Claremont and Giuliana Bordereau, Olga Rudge had a life of her own. By the time she met Pound, she was already well known as a concert violinist. Later, while conducting research into the music of Antonio Vivaldi, she discovered 309 Vivaldi concertos that had not been performed for centuries, if ever. With Pound's encouragement and collaboration, she organized and played in Vivaldi festivals and was in large part responsible for the Vivaldi Renaissance. After Pound's death in 1972, Olga continued to live in their tiny house not far from the Salute Church. She lived alone, there was no spinster niece, but hardly as a recluse. She loved company and was by all accounts charming, bright, talkative, and energetic. Curious to have a look at the house where Ezra Pound and Olga Rudge had lived, I went to Rio Fornace, a tranquil canal in the quiet neighborhood of Dorsoduro. There, a few steps off the canal in a shady cul-de-sac, I found 252 Calle Querini, a narrow three-story cottage. A marble plaque mounted above the door bore the inscription, "With unwavering love for Venice, Ezra Pound, titan of poetry, lived in this house for half a century." A pane of frosted glass made it impossible to look inside, but I heard stirrings in the house next door and saw figures moving about through the window. This, I remembered, was the house Rose Lauritsen had inherited from her mother. She told me she had given it to the English church as a vicarage. I knocked on the door and was greeted by a friendly-faced, white-haired man with the accent of an American southerner. He was the Reverend Mr. James Harkins, the Anglican minister of St. George's. "Not at all," he said when I introduced myself and apologized for showing up unannounced. "I'd say you've come at just the right time. My wife and I were about to sit down to cocktails, weren't we, Dora? Won't you join us?" A short, dark-haired lady stepped out of a closet-sized kitchen and smiled as she removed her apron. Reverend Harkins poured beefeater gin liberally into a measuring cup. "You like your martinis on the dry side, don't you?" He turned toward me, eyebrows raised in expectation of a yes. "By the way, you can call me Jim."